Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. You're listening to the Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello again, everybody. This is Jay Shapiro. Thanks for listening. Today I want to touch upon a number of items. First, it's interesting how the leadership of the Palestinian Authority does not want Palestinians to have any benefit from the Jews. The leadership of the Palestinian Authority, which is quite wealthy and takes good care of itself, is not interested in seeing the average Palestinian in the street have any improvement in his life. For example, the Israeli supermarket chain Rami Levi, which is known for its low prices and which has opened stores in many deprived neighborhoods for the benefit of lower-income people, this is a chain of stores that has thousands of Arab employees. It has now opened a store in East Jerusalem for the benefit of the Arabs who live there. The Palestinian Authority now says that any Arab who makes purchases in the Rami Levi store is a traitor to the Palestinian cause. And on opening day last week, a bomb was thrown at the store, which could have injured and even killed the Arabs. And so one can pretty much deduce from the response of the Palestinian Authority to the opening of the Rami Levi store that it is impossible to make peace with the Arabs. This is an example of mutual benefit for both sides, and the response to it by the Palestinian Authority shows there's no one in a position of authority on the Palestinian side with whom anybody can make any kind of peace. It is this kind of incident that reflects the big picture. And I also want to say a few words about the new anti-Semitism in America, which goes under a new heading. It's called white privilege. Now, anti-Semitism includes white Jewish privilege, and I'll explain what that's about. And I also want to say a few words about the upcoming election here in Israel. The election is going to be in April, but the campaign is already going full swing, and it's almost impossible to figure out who's doing what and what anybody stands for. I'll say a few words about that. Again, thanks for listening. I shall be right back. Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. I think I can rightfully call this segment of the program that I can give the title, The Supermarket and the Peace Process. I'll divide this into two parts. First of all, I was in a shopping mall a few days ago with my wife, and I noticed there were a very large number of Arabs pushing shopping carts that were really piled up and stuffed with all kinds of things. I couldn't imagine that a family or two, even three families, would need that amount of food. And with this tremendous variety, and there were at least a half a dozen Arabs doing this. And my wife said it's very simple. These people own markets in the East Jerusalem or in the Arab sections, and they go to the shopping malls in Israel where the food is fairly inexpensive. They buy the food, they take it back to their own markets, and they sell it at a profit. So that's item one under the supermarket and the peace process. The second part is much more interesting. It's often possible to estimate how large things can be predicted by small things that are happening. We can see how the response in the Arab section to the opening of a supermarket by a Jew in an Arab neighborhood is indicative of how there is no peace process between Israel and the Arabs. The Rami Levy is the owner of Israel's third largest supermarket chain, and he has approximately 4,000 workers, approximately half of which he says are Palestinians and Israeli Arabs. He opened a market in East Jerusalem. Now, Rami Levy does not discriminate, and that's his policy. He doesn't discriminate on the basis of gender, religion, ethnicity, and he hires and promotes employees with absolutely no regard to who they are. Whether you're Palestinians or Israelis, they're treated equally and they receive equal benefits, and the salaries are based solely on one's position and one's performance. That's his policy. It's a listed and open policy. Now, what happened is that he opened a shopping mall in East Jerusalem, and the Palestinian Authority is extremely upset about it. It seems that a Jewish Israeli businessman simply has no right to build in East Jerusalem. Now, most of the customers and the workers are Arabs, almost all of them. And the Fatah, the PLO, or the Palestinian Authority leaders, have called for boycotting the mall. Now, Fatah is often described in the Western media as a moderate faction, and as Fatah has responded to the mall enterprise in a manner that showcases how Palestinian leaders continue to torpedo benefits to their own people. Where in the world would any leader condemn a project that provides jobs to hundreds of his or her people? Where in the world would any leader call on his or her people to boycott a shopping mall or a supermarket that offers competitive prices for clothes and food? Where in the world would a leader describe the opening of a commercial project that benefits his people as a catastrophe, what they call a Nakba? That's their favorite word. Levy's supermarkets in Jerusalem and on the West Bank also are popular among Palestinian shoppers. They say the prices there are lower than those in Arab-owned businesses, and that is most likely why hundreds of Palestinians converged on this newly opened supermarket in a mall when it officially opened about a week ago. Israeli supermarkets hire hundreds of Palestinians from the West Bank as well as Arab residents in Jerusalem who work together with Jewish colleagues. I see this all the time. However, for the officials of Fatah, the Palestinian Authority, the image of Palestinians and Jews working in harmony is apparently loathsome. They do not like the idea that Palestinian workers are being paid good salaries and are being treated by their employer with respect. They also don't like seeing Palestinian shoppers queuing up to buy food and goods that are being offered them in better quality and cheaper prices. Instead of welcoming the inauguration of a shopping mall that provides job opportunities to dozens of Palestinians and also lower prices, the Palestinian Authority officials are talking about an Israeli plan to undermine the Palestinian economy. And the officials called this a sad day for Jerusalem. The project aims at undermining the Arab commerce in Jerusalem and making it subordinate to the Israeli economy, according to the Palestinian Authority. The hundreds of Palestinians who flooded the new mall last week seem to disagree with the grim picture painted by the Palestinian Authority. The large turnout is, of course, good news. It shows the Palestinians are like any customers around the world who prefer better products at lower costs. For them, this was not a sad day, but an exciting one. A mall has come near their home, offering them a wide range of products at economic rates. Nonetheless, the Palestinian Authority was extremely upset and said that one of the heads of the Palestinian Authority said the Palestinian capitalists are cowards. They could have prevented this happening had they invested, if Palestinians had invested in the construction of a Palestinian shopping mall. There are wealthy Palestinian businessmen, and they're getting rich, but they're poor in their will and their education toward helping their own people. The officials of the Palestinian Authority say the Palestinian businessmen have no faith in their own people and would rather invest their money elsewhere. A senior PLO Palestinian Authority official took the incitement a step further. He said that any Palestinian who shops at the new mall or rents space there will be accused of betraying the homeland. They went on to peddle the old Palestinian line that purchasing Israeli products is an act of support for settlements and for the Israeli army. Now, apparently this incitement didn't fall on deaf ears. On the day the mall was inaugurated here in Jerusalem, Palestinians threw a number of firebombs at the compound, forcing the Palestinian shoppers to flee for their lives. No one was hurt. There was no damage, and neither to the stores nor the vehicles, and people went right back to shopping. The threats are being directed toward Palestinian shoppers and Palestinian merchants who rented space in this new mall. The thugs who attacked the mall with firebombs could have injured or killed Palestinians. That didn't bother them. The thugs, who were believed to be affiliated with the Palestinian Authority, would apparently rather see their people dead than having fun or buying attractively priced products at a mall that is owned by Israelis. By spearheading this campaign of incitement and intimidation, the Palestinian Authority is again showing its true colors. How is it possible to imagine that Abbas or any of his Palestinian Authority lieutenants would ever make peace with Israel when they can't even tolerate the idea of Palestinians and Jews working together for a simple common good? If a Palestinian who buys Israeli milk is a traitor in the eyes of the Palestinian Authority, it's not difficult to imagine the fate of any Palestinian who would dare to discuss compromise with Israel. If he's lucky, he'll have a close encounter with a firebomb, because that's what happened to these innocent customers, Palestinians, who wanted to get cheaper prices for quality goods in their own neighborhood. So it could well be that if you consider buying a product in an Israeli supermarket as being a crime and as treason, what would happen if somebody wanted to really make some kind of compromise settlement with Israel? So this, the attitude of the Palestinian Authority toward the opening of a Jewish supermarket in a Palestinian neighborhood, which provides not only jobs for Palestinians, that's the ones who are working there, and good prices for quality products for the Palestinian citizenry. So how would, if that is something that is worthy of getting a firebomb thrown at you, how is that for Palestinian readiness to engage in a peace process with Israel? So I think, you know, if you look at little things that are going on and you can extrapolate from what you see happening and to see what it means on a large scale, if the Palestinian Authority cannot look upon the opening of a supermarket as something that's good toward living together and providing good things for the Palestinian people, then can you imagine what they'll do if somebody who tries to negotiate with Israel to get some kind of settlement that'll be good for the Palestinian people in general? So I think that the supermarket test shows that there's no chance of making peace with the Palestinians, at least for the immediate future, if not longer. I'll be back after the break.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar? She's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show. You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. On this segment of the program, I want to say a few words about several of the latest forms of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is protean in character. Protean means that it comes in all kinds of shapes and forms. First, there is another protean sickness called Jewish self-hatred, which I think can be called a form of anti-Semitism, even though it comes from Jews. This Jewish self-hatred takes all kinds of forms, and incidentally, I never heard of a Muslim self-hatred or a Catholic self-hatred or a Protestant self-hatred. Jewish self-hatred or self-hatred itself is apparently something uniquely to being Jewish. For example, a number of Jewish individuals and organizations have become leaders within the BDS movement, which essentially seeks to destroy the Jewish state. Jewish self-hatred, by the way, didn't begin with the BDS movement. Look in the Bible, go to Isaiah chapter 49, verse 17. It says, and I quote, "Your destroyers and devastators will depart from within you," unquote. History is replete with examples of Jews who hated the Jewish people so vehemently that they dedicated their entire lives to the destruction of Jews or Jewry. For example, there's a new Jewish group called If Not Now, which together with collaborators from several Jewish organizations is attacking Israel and the state of Jews. Now, the other form that I wanted to talk about is the new thing called White Jews. It's a new form of anti-Semitism that so far exists only in the United States. This recent controversy about the anti-Jewish views in the Women's March has pretty much uncovered a new anti-Semitism that's came into existence recently in America. It's called White Jewishness. The Women's March activists are grappling with how they treat Jews and whether Jews should be counted as privileged white Americans or marginalized minority. There's a whole big discussion going on. It started about 2 years ago. And what they're trying to do is force the Jewish people into a binary of white versus non-white that's currently trendy in the United States. The new discussion, this white Jewishness, is taking place primarily in the United States, and it's designed to label Jews as white supremacists. I don't want to go into all the details of who's doing it, but I don't know if the names of the people involved are familiar to the listeners. But one of the leaders said, and I quote, "We've all learned a lot about how white Jews, as white people, uphold white supremacy." Now, this woman said, "We white Jews especially need to recognize that centering out our own status as victims is a power move as a way to avoid self-reflection on our relative status in a white supremacist world." In other words, the Jews are trying to make a power move by considering themselves not to be white, because if you're white, you're the oppressor. It's particularly interesting, given the history of anti-Semitism, how Jews are now considered not only recipients of white privilege because they pass as white, but are seen as emblematic of whiteness and part of white supremacy. The concept of anti-Semitism, by the way, goes back to about 1869 in Germany. There was an activist, an anti-Jewish activist named Wilhelm Marr, and they didn't like the hatred of Jews. That sounded bad. So they decided to make it, to clean it up, and called anti-Semitism. Sounds a little bit better. William Marr objected to the idea that Jews would assimilate into Germany. Anti-Semitism became entwined with the idea that Jews were a separate race from white Europeans. In other words, it wasn't Judenhass hating Jews. It was something against this race. And they were a separate race from the white Europeans, particularly Germans and Northern Europeans. Today, that's come full circle, and Jews are portrayed as not just passing as white, but being an example of white supremacy. So first they were told that they're trying to pass as Aryans or as white, and now it turns out they're really part of this white section of society that's oppressing others. So how can this be that only 70 years after the Holocaust that people genocide against for being non-Europeans and now called white supremacists? So apparently this is a part of a carefully managed agenda in the United States to not permit Jews to be part of discussions about people of color or racism. The reason for this is that hatred of Jews has always been about creating an all-encompassing other that is dehumanized and defining that as the Jews. Therefore, in European history, Jews are hated for not being Christians, accused of blood libels, and forced to live in ghettos or to enter cities through the gate where the swine in the sewage was. Then came the era when Jews were assimilating, became less religiously observant, so they were labeled not as a religious problem, but as an ethnic racial problem. Oriental wandering Jews who were foreigners to the white society in Europe. Today, in the United States, with the popular view in some left-leaning circles, is that being white is a kind of slander. Jews are now considered white. The term white Jews is anti-Jewish because no other group is subject to this same slur of essentially shoehorning them into a false whiteness. For instance, Muslims, of which there are almost 2 billion, are not called white Muslims. Only Jews are called white Jews. Used often enough, the term is designed to dehumanize Jews and take away their diversity, forcing them into the white category in America. And when you say white in America, that means you're in a majority, and that means you're privileged. The term white Jews should be resisted. It's designed solely to make the Jews not only other, but at the same time, make them a member of the majority. White means majority in the United States, while Jew means other. So labeling Jews white is a way to purposely attack and single out this one group. You'll notice that those who use this term don't say white Muslims, white Hindus, or white Catholics, or any other whites. There's only one group whose religion they seek to lump in the white category. And that goal is to say this often enough until the word Jew is synonymous with white. And you'll notice that white supremacy is often lumped in as well until the word Jew in some American circles will be synonymous with white supremacy. This is the newest form of anti-Semitism because this, among other things, this strips Jews of their historic and diversity. Jews come from Yemen and Morocco and Iraq and Iran and any other place you can name. When Americans say white Jews, the idea is to rip that diversity away and bleach it out until there is no history of the Jewish people themselves. Jews are even told now that any discussion of Jews being victims of racism is a way for Jews to move themselves into people who are only tolerated when really they are among those who do not do the tolerating. The only minority group in America told that it cannot discuss its suffering and that it is white. These are the Jews. Just as the term anti-Semitism, which I mentioned before, is coined in the 19th century, led to dehumanizing of Jews, the term white Jews is designed to dehumanize, to package Jews into one concept of race. The Jews are now white, and white in America means you don't tolerate other people. You're bad if you're white. The truth of the matter is there are no white Jews. There are only Jews, and there are white people. Some Jews are white and some aren't. One is not synonymous with the other. Some Jews may appear white or even have origins in Europe, and some don't. There are many more Muslims who pass as white than there are Jews. If you don't use the term white Muslims, then you certainly shouldn't use the term white Jews. And anybody who uses the term white Jews must be immediately confronted as to why no other religion gets this white definitional treatment. So now what's happened is the newest form of anti-Semitism is to accuse the Jews of being white. This is only in the United States so far, I might add, because being white means you're somebody who doesn't tolerate other people. You don't tolerate people of other colors. You don't tolerate minorities. So if you really don't like Jews and you want to call them something bad that has a bad connotation, you call them white Jews. So white Jews is now a new American anti-Semitism. So far, it's apparently limited only to the United States because it's in the United States that you have this white-black gap, this binary gap. At any rate, this is the newest form of anti-Semitism. It goes along with the new BDS. So, as I said, anti-Semitism can take many forms and continues to do so. I'll be back after the break.
In a time where feelings have become facts, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. We have an election coming up in April, which in Israel is an extremely long campaign period, and it's extremely confusing. I decided I'm going to speak about it today and that I probably won't speak about it At least I promised myself I wouldn't speak about it until after the election itself, because it's extremely confusing. For those who don't know how the system works here, I can give you a very short explanation. In Israel, there's no local representation. You don't have anybody from your area, for your district, running for office. What you have is the whole country is one, essentially one election district, and there are 120 seats in the Knesset. And every party puts up a list anywhere from 1 to 120. And after the election, you can only vote for a party list. You can't vote for an individual. And the people within each party struggle about where their name should be on the list, because obviously the higher you are on the list, the better chances that you'll be elected. At any rate, you can't choose an individual candidate and say, I like this guy, I want to vote for him. You have to vote for a party. And with your one vote, you get the whole party, all 120, if that's minimum on a list. And then what happens is that you see what percentage each list got, and that's the percentage of votes that they get. If, for example, a party would get 50% of the votes, they get 60 seats in a 120-seat Knesset. Generally, they get much less. I think the highest it was ever gotten was by the Mapai, the Labor Party under Ben-Gurion, which, if my memory serves me correctly, got something like 40% of the vote. So what happens is that you get a government you really didn't expect, because whoever forms the government has to make a coalition that altogether is at least 61 members so they can have the majority vote. And then they have to compromise among themselves and give all the little parties what they need so that they'll remain loyal to the coalition. It's very complicated. It's really a mess. Now, what happens is that the people on the party list, they have no loyalty to the voters. They only have loyalty to the party. So, for example, within the last few days, within the last week, the country witnessed a dramatic breakdown of what was called the Bayit Yehudi Party, the Jewish House Party, Jewish Home Party. The two top people in the party, Naftali Bennett and Ayelet Shaked, and Naftali Bennett and Ayelet Shaked are both ministers in the government. They had been number one and two on the list, and they just walked off. They quit the list, and they formed a new list, which is called the Hayamina Chadash, the New Right. Now, the labor leader, Avi Gabay, kicked out the Tzipi Livni, who was the head of HaTenuah, which a party that had merged together with the Labor Party and formed one party. Now they threw her out. That was known as the Zionist Union, but now it's sort of deunionized. The former chief of staff of the Israeli army, Benny Gantz, announced a name for his new party. He just created a party. It's called Chosen Liyisrael, which means Israel's resilience. And the former defense minister and ex-chief of staff, Moshe Yaalon, declared that he has a new party that would be called Telem. It almost doesn't matter what official name the parties choose for themselves. They will inevitably be known mainly by the people who lead them. The average voter will talk about either voting for Benny Gantz or Bogi Yaalon or for Yair Lapid, who's the head of a party called Yesh Atid. There's a guy named Moshe Kahalon. He's got a party, Kulanu. Avigdor Lieberman, who was the foreign secretary, he ended up quitting the government. He has his own party called Yisrael Beitenu. Now there's a woman named Orly Levy Abakasis, who recently revived the name of her own political party. It's called Gesher, which means bridge. And Likud voters are going to vote for the Likud party, but essentially they'll be voting for Bibi. They'll be voting for Netanyahu. Even those who wish there was another party head besides Netanyahu, but that's the way it is. Now, on the surface, it would appear that a large number of parties is a sign of healthy democratic, healthy democracy, and it offers the voters a plurality of choices where everyone, no matter their background or ideologies, can find representation. However, it just works the other way around. Many of the parties currently enjoying media coverage are driven by political egos rather than a solid platform. There's been a joke now because Gantz, who was the former head of the army, has started a party. He's number one in the party. Nobody knows who else is on his list. And he's managed to gain significant ratings in the polls without ever saying what he stands for. No one knows what his positions are on the matters of religion and state or the Palestinian conflict. But according to the polls, he's going to get around 15 seats. Why? I have no idea why. Is there a reason that these party heads have chosen to go it alone? They don't join and strengthen other parties. In other words, the new parties popping up like mushrooms after the rain. It's absolutely laughable if it wasn't so sad. Many of the parties that are currently enjoying a lot of media coverage are simply driven by the political egos of the people who are at the heads of the list. They don't really have a solid platform. It's interesting, by the way, as I mentioned a moment ago, that Gantz has, according to the polls, is going to have 15 seats, and nobody has any idea what he stands for. He keeps his mouth shut. So why have these party heads have chosen to go it alone? Why don't they join other parties and then strengthen them? The reason is that probably they want the top spot. In addition, without a clearly defined platform, disappointed members of Knesset hop between the parties. As a matter of fact, Tzipi Livni has been in the last 10 years, she has actually been in five different parties. So it's no longer a question of abiding by some kind of ideology. It's simply the members of the Knesset who like all the perks, they look for a place that they can temporarily call home. Now, it is true that nobody succeeds in politics without ambition and aspiration. Problem is, it's too easy to let your ego take over, which is not healthy for the electorate. The Netanyahu dissolved the Knesset when he would no longer have a functional coalition capable of mustering a majority vote, which makes sense. If the next Knesset comprises many smaller parties of indeterminate principles, it remained barely functional to be back where we started, except that we have spent a lot of money on the election. There won't be a majority bloc. Whichever party is asked to form a government will have to make compromise with all the other parties that it joins its coalition, and those who vote have no idea what they voted for in the final analysis. And the same thing is true for the opposition to be effective. It also needs to be able to unite and provide a credible political threat and an alternative in the event of a vote of no confidence. It's not only the government has to stand for something, the opposition has to stand for something. So each party of a similar nature right now, as always happens, is drawing away potential voters of a larger list, so it makes whoever is chosen to create the new government more reliant on coalition partners. The number of smaller parties running means that each has a disproportionate amount of power as a kingmaker. They're able to determine who will be prime minister through coalition deal-making. So this opens the door, and we've seen it since the state came into being. This opens the door for political blackmail rather than democratic plurality. There are so many parties running and think, wow, that's wonderful. You have a lot of choices, but it's not true. Because in the end, some government will be formed with all kind of parties that make all kind of compromise with each other. And in the end, the voter don't really know what he's getting. And by the way, it's also true that some smaller parties are unlikely to pass the threshold. You have to, each party, in order to be an elected member of the Knesset, you have to get, I think, 3.5% of the total vote cast. So a lot of parties are not going to make it, and those votes are simply going to be wasted. And actually, in a country like Israel, you'd like to have a situation where every vote counts. But for sure, I think there's somewhere around 20 or 25 parties running for office, which is ridiculous. So while it's positive, everyone in Israel feels they have representatives in the Knesset, it's also important that the country benefit from a stable coalition that you know who you're voting for. Instead, you get a situation where the one who wants a foreign party has to make all kind of compromises, and the party that's going to form the government is going to be vulnerable to political blackmail before every key decision. So there's an interesting expression: the more the merrier. This is not true in Israeli politics, and it's very sad. The truth of the matter is, they simply have to change the way the elections are held in Israel. You should be able to know who you're voting for, somebody who represents your local district, somebody you can turn to when you have something to say. And as I said at the beginning of this segment, this is probably the last thing I'm going to say about the election, unless something really strange happens between now and April. It's just too confusing. So having said all that, I want to thank you for listening, and let's hope we all have a pleasant and quiet week. And God willing, I'll be back next week. Take good care of yourselves. Till then, Jay Shapiro signing off.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Karras from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.